I'm going to be your instructor for longitudinal wheel analysis. And I've been teaching now this course for a few years. I always like to think I was the youngest fellow in the Department for Biostatistics, but not too much anymore. So I didn't like to think about that way. But now I've been teaching this course for quite a while. So I'm getting busy. And so actually the last since last year, we've been upgraded and we had the privilege of using the Bamsen auditorium for the class, which is a very nice room. For me, I come from Bloomberg in the morning and it wasn't freezing cold, but it feels good to have such rooms. So I'm gonna give you a little bit of housekeeping information before we go into the course. So this is the course webpage, and that's where all the material for this class will be posted. Okay? And if you can access this course webpage from my home webpage in the Department of Biostatistics, and I'm pretty sure there is a link to this webpage also from the course webpage in the catalog. I requested to do that. Okay? So this is the course webpage, and the reason why I really would like you use these as a way of checking things about the class at the time. For example, the night before you know the lab and you don't know if the following day there is class, okay? Well, as a general rule, if Johns Hopkins is closed or snow, class will not be held. Like, even if I'm here, I cannot teach the class. In every situation, I cannot teach the class because if people are not coming, there will be complaint. So, but check this first web page because we update it all the time. And so any question that you have before sending an email to me or the TA, please check with you. Now, the second thing is that this year, for the first time, the lecture will be taped, and the audio files will get more and more sophisticated every year. Actually, this idea that I've been taped and then talked on the web to refine me, but anyway, it will happen. So I will just make sure that I'm not saying any stupid jokes. So I will be taped, and the file will be posted on the website next to the lecture. So even if you skip the lecture, skip the notes, you can always, I could get pretty boring, but anyway, it's there. So we're going to do that. So the class is Monday and Wednesday. Monday, we start with lab, so, and it's everywhere here. I mean, so that's where we do all our work. So we start with lab, 9:15 to 10:15. Actually, if I could be here at 9, so they do from 9 to 10:15, and then you have a 15-minute break, and then I come here at 10:15, so I'm here during your break if you have questions, and then there is a lecture from 10 to 15 minutes, okay? And all everything is in this room. Now I'm just going to walk you through the course webpage so that we are clear. So, the course info in terms of when is my office hour, and the TA will have their office hour pretty soon. This is the course objective that we will talk about it today. The announcement important day, so that's where we'll be posted the homeworks, the exam, the solution of the homeworks, and so on. Fortunately, I remember to took away the exam last year, last week. So it's empty. Now, lecture notes. Now, the lecture notes, these are the same identical of this is identical to the one that you already have. Okay? So from lecture 1 to lecture 12, you have a copy already. And I'm not planning to change. From year to year, you understand the background might change a little bit, so I might tweak a few things. But the 90% of the book is this. So you don't need to print it out, any of these. So please don't do so, okay? So you have it. Now, the lab notes, okay? So the lab notes are a little bit more complicated. So I'm not giving you any copies of the lab notes. And that's how we're going to proceed. Right now, there is a lot of material under the lab notes.
because it's the material of the previous year, and, you know, we have it. Now, what the TA will do is that by Friday of the previous week, will update the entry for the lab, and it will tell you by Friday what is going to be the lab material that will be covered for the following week, okay? And also, they will tell you what is the additional material that is posted on the web page that you might want to look at, because there are additional output of software, additional questions, and so on, but that will not necessarily cover by in the lab, okay? The reason why we do so, so because every year, the labs change. I mean, we can't say exactly, you know, each day what type of lab we will do, because sometimes, you know, there's a big confusion about a topic, so we need to have an extra lab on a particular topic. So my recommendation is, for Wednesday, you can actually start, you see, for Wednesday, actually, we have it, okay? So for this week. So you can go ahead. As a general, when you come here, bring your own laptop, okay? So you can look at the lab from your own, so you can download the hard copy, you can look at your own laptop. The TA will use the SAS and SCADA, and you can do some of the SCADA analysis with the TA here in the room, okay? But please don't go ahead now and print it out all the lab material, because that could change, okay? And although it's important that you have it there, so you have an idea of what are the things that we are going to do, okay? Is everyone clear with the lab? So this will be all the lab, and so they will put it, you know, date by date. Now, here will be the data set, okay? And so as we were going to through the course, every data set we use in the lab or in the lecture are posted there, and, you know, you will download it, and you will analyze some of these data sets in the lab, in the homework, in the exam, okay? Now, software. Well, we do have, in addition to the labs, over the years, I collect all files that are useful files, okay? So there are some additional SCADA functions, some additional S+ functions, although I'm going to do very, very little of S+. That's a little bit more for the biostat student. There is a lot of SAS software, okay? And so, because you will see that some of the data sets, we will analyze it primarily in SCADA, but if you want to do SAS on top of that, you're into SAS, you use a SAS most of the time, also you can find additional information here. Now, textbook, okay? So at the bottom, actually, there are different textbooks, and this is the one that we will use for this class, okay? So this is one. So I will highly recommend you to get a copy of the book and read the book in addition to the lab notes, to the lecture notes. The lecture notes are not going to be comprehensive with the material. So what I'm going to do with this class, I'm going to follow this book, but it will be at the technical level lower than this book. So my lecture notes is basically try to in some situations, try to translate some of the technicality of this book, you know, to a broader audience, okay? But I would like you to have the book and to read the book, because there is some important material that's not covered in my lecture notes. And you will see that the lecture notes, how they are organized, you really follow the book pretty closely, okay? So, I have a little list of things I have to remember to tell you, and then I take questions. So, the previous year, we had two TAs. This year, there will be three TAs, okay? And the three TAs, so this is like an all-female crowd this year. Be careful. There is an Italian, which is me. There is a Serena, which is my PhD student from Romania, and Wen Win, and from Peking, and EG. Okay, so all of these three girls have a lot of energy. Okay, so I think that
Now, I'm sure that one question which is in your mind is in terms of exams and homework. So let's get this out of the way immediately. So we did two exams. So we have one midterm and one final. Both are take-home data analysis. Okay. The midterm, we don't have the date yet because it really depends on, you know, the pace under which I cover the material. But the midterm is something between the fourth and the fifth week of the course. And the final is generally 1 week before the end. In most cases, you have between 5 and 7 days to do the data analysis, which has to be individual. And so that would be basically the exam. Now, from now to the midterm, it's going to be one homework, which is basically to give you confidence that actually, you know, you're getting toward be able to do a midterm. So the homework is also the same thing. It's a data analysis. So we will post the homework on the web. You will work at a home, or you can even work in a group. I don't care for the homework. And if you want to get back to me, that's fine. We will give you feedback. But you will now be, you know, graded for the homework. It's just for you to basically work on data analysis, basically try to see, you know, how much familiarity are you getting. And we will post the solution of the homework on the website. So basically, it's really your internal check, okay? And then there will be the midterm. So I think that's the worst, at least what I have in my list. And now before I get into the class material, is there questions? Yes. Yes. Well, if you don't have, I mean, it is preferable to come here on lab and then sit on your computer. We will not. I don't think we will provide it. If you don't have it on your own, fortunately, you have to go to the computer lab. But I can ask if there is an easy way of. I'll check if we can give you a way of getting the lab or sit on your laptop with the one that doesn't have. That's a good point. So I think, I mean, honestly, you know, you can come here and listen to me, but if you don't come to lab, you're never going to learn anything. You have to do it. So I highly recommend that come to lab Monday and Wednesday. They're not going to be the team lab. They're going to be two different labs. So.
I know
that people are counseling, and but before they, if you can imagine, it's going to be 70 students, and then there is no way I can find another room at a different time. So no. So for the people that counseling, that's why also we have all the materials posted on the website. You're by yourself student, so you can get these. So you will help. Also, the bias of students will have additional homework, so I didn't tell you that. Any other questions? You guys have a poll? Okay. So, now I have to figure out to turn this off. So one of the reasons why, I mean, I could project the lab notes from a laptop, you know, it's possible website. One of the reasons why I'm getting sort of this old fashioned transparency is because sometimes I write on it. So that's the other thing. Just one last comment before we get into the material. For you to get a sense of how it's going to be the workflow okay? So this is gonna be it's gonna be a challenging class. And I think it's important that, and most of you actually are registered for credit. So today we have 60 people registered so far. And then most of you are registered for credit. But it depends if you're registered for credit or not for credit. So this is a challenging class. It's important that you dedicate time. Because otherwise you're gonna get lost. But in order for you to know where is gonna be the time where you'll be more frustrated and less frustrated, because now I can predict. So the first week and the second week are very nice and very fun. That's at least for me. We go all the concepts, all the data sets, the exploratory data analysis. And after the third week, we introduce some of the notations for longitudinal data analysis. A little bit of the notation of the analysis, a little bit of matrix algebra. So the week three and week four, you are not going to like it, okay? For as much as I will do my best, and it's not going to be, I'm not going to, I don't want to warn you, but I know that around week three and week four, you get a little frustrated because there is a little bit of notation. Now, I cannot get rid of the notation because otherwise I cannot explain you the statistical model. Now, week five and week six, it's one of the duration is flat. Also, for 2 or 3 weeks, you basically, you're going to be a little frustrated. But then after the midterm, and I promise you, after the midterm, it's going to be downhill. As soon as we finish longitudinal data analysis for continuous data, longitudinal data analysis for binary data and for count data, it's easier, and the modeling, the notation is much lighter. So for anyone, I don't know that anyone of you like run races, Nicole run races, we run races together. It's nice to know where the uphill is coming, so then you can get ready psychologically. So the uphill is the third week to the fourth week, a little bit of the fifth week. And after that, it's done, okay? So then at least when we get to 3 weeks, you can say, I told you. Okay. Now, a few people came in. I put there some a copy of the course notes. So everyone that is in the class, okay, and was 70, we made a 70 copy, and there are 60 people there. So there are at least 10 people more. So if you don't have a copy of the course notes, please email me and we will be, actually no, do not email me, I'll bring another 10 copies in Wednesday. All right, so I'm gonna get started. So basically what we're gonna do with this course is to introduce and describe statistical methods for the analysis of longitudinal data with a strong emphasis on applications in the biological and health science. Okay, we are in school of public health, so a lot of our data sets will have an health-related component. So how can we place longitudinal data with respect to things that we know already? Okay, well, you can broadly think about statistics in three different ways. One is univariate statistics, where basically each subject gives rise to a single measurement term the response. And that's what you have done in all the regression courses. If you think about every time you have a regression model, your outcome variable will be the blood pressure of that particular patient, or if that particular patient has a double or doesn't have a particular disease. So it's one measurement for each patient. And in the 620s or the 650s, you have your outcome Y, which is the response, right? And you have one response for every single subject. And most of the time, the response will be independent. So you have one measurement for each subject. Now, multivariate statistics, few of you probably have done statistical methods for multivariate statistics, that's often where, for a particular subject, you don't have only one measurement, but you can have this, you can have more than one measurement for different, for different type of response. So the example is, you have a patient came to the clinic, and you measure the blood pressure, the weight, and the height. Okay? So for that particular patient, you have the three responses But these imagine three different things: the pressure, wave, and height. And so, in statistics, there is in a lot of methodology that deals with the multivariate response. Okay? And so three measurements of three different things for the same patient. You know, another practical example is that if you have in the area of ophthalmology, you might have a patient where you measure, you know, some characteristics of the eyes for both eyes. So for that particular patient, we have to measure it. Okay. Now, longitudinal data analysis, it's not univariate statistics. It's not multivariate statistics. It's something that is in between. Okay. Is the same idea of multivariate statistics because each person has multiple responses, has multiple measurements. Okay? But these are multiple measurements, which this is the same response measured multiple times. So basically, the example is that we measure the blood pressure the first visit, and then we re-measure the blood pressure of the same patient the second visit, and then we re-measure the blood pressure of the same patient the third visit. Okay, we have an experiment, we have a mice, we measure the tumor size of a particular mice at the first day, the second day, day 15. Okay? So you see at each unit, we have a vector of measurements, but these are repeated measurements over time of the same response. So you see, it's not multivariate statistics because we measure the same thing over and over. But it's not also univariate statistics because each person gives rise to a vector of measurement, not just one. And if we measure every person only once, then we don't need to do longitudinal data analysis, we just go back to the standard method. Okay? So we're going to extend everything you have learned so far on standard linear regression for data, when you have data that are repeated measurements on the same subject. Okay. So I imagine I'm going to give you the topic that we're going to do with this one. I don't know how much that will help with this one. So what we're going to do through this class is that we'll start with the basic issue of exploratory data analysis. So the exploratory data analysis is actually extremely important. If you're really good on exploring the data, you're halfway through. And one of the most common mistakes in statistics is that you just go right away on feeling very complicated model without even looking at the data. And that's where your huge mistakes are generally made. So if you get experience and you know all the tricks of exploring the data, looking at the different points, then actually the modeling is really to try to wrap it up and calculate the statistical significance. So doing exploratory data analysis is very, very important. And that will be our first 2 weeks. This is how the travel starts, okay? And that's where we will have linear regression model for a continuous outcome repeated over time, okay? So blood pressure is continuous or body weight is another. So every time you have a continuous response, with it is a measure from set of subjects multiple times, that's where we look for continuous measurements. And so we will define the model, we will define how to estimate the parameters, and we will, in the labs and here, we will apply many times. And that's how the midterm is gonna come at the end of this topic, okay? So this is really the half point of the class. And then, we were gonna basically extend the theory not only for continuous data but also for binary data and for binary data and for count data, for Poisson data as well. One thing that I should say, although this is a little theory, when you think about analysis of longitudinal data, there are three different modeling approaches that you can use. There are marginal models, random effect models, and transition models. Okay. This is just some language that you will get very familiar. But so we will look at all different ways of analyzing this data. And then we will do also analysis of longitudinal data when the outcome is binary and the outcome is a count.
okay? So an example of a longitudinal data set for binary is where you have a patient every time it comes to visit, instead of measuring the blood pressure, basically you have the outcome, the response that is binary, just, you know, yes or no, the least, no relief, and so on. Or a count, which basically, for example, you can measure the number of epileptic seizure that patients have in the first week, and then you remember the number of epileptic seizures that patients have the second week, and so on. So we will look at all analysis of longitudinal data for any different type, you know, for a different way of how your response variable So I want to contrast what is the difference between a longitudinal study and a cross-sectional study. So I think now So longitudinal study, people are measured over time. Cross-sectional study, a single outcome is measured per action divided. So cross-sectional study would, you know, any linear regression, personal regression, logistic regression that you have done at this point, you have used a cross-sectional study. Now, why is it important to measure? Why is it important to measure multiple measurements over time? So, you know, why do we need to learn the LDA? Okay? Well, because if you can, if you have a data set where you have multiple measurements on the same subject over time, basically you can look at the changes over time within individual, and you also can look at the difference among people in their baseline level. So the standard linear regression has always used this one. But now, because we have repeated measurements on the same person, we can look at what happened to a particular subject. So if you have a particular predictor that varies from time to time, how do you outcome for that particular subject vary from time to time? Okay? And I'll give you an example. So let me give you a very... how many of you have spoken about zero class before? So you know that what the one thing he loves to do, which sometimes drives me a little crazy, is that he has all these, things where you have one slide over the other and some moving edge and then it's like a headache. Did you do that? Well, so he gave me this slide. I'm going to use it, but it's going to be all the time when I'm going to do that. Okay? So I'm going to give you an example of what is the difference between a cross-sectional analysis. Hey guys, you don't need to see this, but plain and safe. No? So this is an example. Okay, so let's talk about this data set. So we have this data set, and what we have age versus reading ability. So we have a bunch of kids, and for each child, we measure the age, and we measure the reading ability. And this is the data set. That's all we know. Okay? So if you look at this data set, what can you conclude? Good. Okay. So we can see the linear regression, right? We see the line has a negative slope, and we conclude that as kids get older, the reading ability is down. But now after that, your investigator came back and said, oh, you know, I forgot to tell you something. I forgot to tell you that so many data points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So the investigator tell you, actually, these are not 12 kids. What we did, these are really 6 kids. And what we did, we measure them twice. Okay? And so, and now I'm going to connect with the line who are the same kids, and that's the bigger approach. Okay? Oh, really? Yeah. So, and it's not so, you see, now, what I did, I connected with the line the dots that are for the same child. So, this is the same child. He came here, and we measured the reading ability, and then he came again. And we measure the reading ability again. So what do you conclude from this feature? totally different story. Okay? So,
now, if you didn't know, and you do a cross-sectional analysis, or you do a standard linear regression, and no one tell you about the longitudinal structure of the data, you will get the wrong answer. If you compare it, you're going to have a negative slope. But now, so this is the difference between comparing without taking into account the structure and looking at the aging effect. So looking at how things change within each child. And so here you would say, well, the difference, you know, there are children that start with a higher and lower reading ability, but they all improve. Okay? And similarly, sometimes we are lucky that it seems to be like that. We're lucky. Right? So, kind of, you will still do either the confidence interval wrong, but you will at least look at the same conclusion, right? So, that's what all longitudinal data analysis is about, knowing that you have repeated measurements for each subject and being able to distinguish what is the relationship between age and reading ability at their baseline from what is the relationship between age and reading ability within each child. Okay? So you see, you have two sorts of information. One is you can throw away the longitudinal component and just compare and do a standard regression, standard linear regression, a baseline, and you all know how to do that, just the standard, right? So then you say, well, a baseline, that's how things go, or a visit one. You compare different kids, and you face a standard regression, and you can see a baseline or a visit one, this is the relationship between age and disability. But then, you're now going to have an additional source of information, which say what is the relationship between a particular child. Fine, all of these are some very interesting, but why do we need to speak about a week, right? Well, so why do we need a special method to analyze this data? Well, so let me say that YI1, YI2, and YINI are the repeated measurements for a particular subject. So let's get in a little bit of the notation from here. I is a subject. So the first index will always be denote the subject. And the second will always denote the time of the measurement. Okay? So what I mean by that is YI1 is the blood pressure measurement for subject I at the first visit. YI2 is the blood pressure of subject I at the second visit. And then YINI. Okay, NI is the last visit for that particular subject. Now, why we have an I at the bottom? Because, for example, we will have a situation where different subjects might be measured different numbers of times, right? You can have a subject which we measure the blood pressure 3 times, and other we will measure the blood pressure 5 times. So that's why we have NI, okay? So the number of times that subject is measured can vary. And so, you know, we will see for the big part of the course, we will actually assume that everyone is measured the same number of times, make our life a little easier, but then we will extend that to allow that you have a different number of years. So anyway, because you have repeated measurements on the same subject, can we assume that these measurements are independent? If you measure my blood pressure every week, and you have the 3 measurements, and we measure high blood pressure 3 weeks, of course the one mine would be more similar the 3 times than her, right? There are so many things about us that make the data for the same person highly correlated. So we need to take into account the clustering effect. And if we completely ignore the clustering effect, you get wrong answer, but also even if the pattern is the same, the statistical uncertainty in your estimation will be wrong, will be incorrect. Okay? So when you do have an analysis about understanding that correlation, modeling that correlation, and estimating what we are interested in, take into account the that correlation. That's why we are here. So the
correlation might be a scientific focus. So how much my measurements are correlated can be something that is interesting to say. But what is most important is most of the time by data here I just also denote a regression coefficient. So most of the time we were interested in if a particular treatment is effective to a particular disease. And so we want to estimate the treatment effect, let's say the day of the treatment effect, and we want to estimate it so that we properly evaluate the statistical uncertainty about the thing. And so the statistical uncertainty, when the statistical uncertainty has to take into account of this correlation. Now, this is why it's important to do exploratory data analysis well. Because if you do explorative analysis of that data set, and you discover that the repeated measurements within subjects are not correlated, or very, very little correlated. Yeah, we don't need to do anything of that. The data are almost independent, and you don't have your standard regression. Right? So we need to know how big is that correlation, what type of the correlation. That is really what we need to understand to make correct inference about the treatment effect. Okay? Unfortunately, most of the time, especially for us, that we work where our responses are health responses on subjects, you know, they will be correlated because they are very complicated. Okay? So when you have a longitudinal data set, you have a lot of opportunities to learn new things. You can, what is most important, you can distinguish from the longitudinal to the cross-sectional information. We'll see that you can choose several targets of estimation. But you have to deal with the challenge that the J I don't understand what I mean by that. J. Whatever it is, I the subject, J is the digit. And so I say that YIJ is similar, would be correlated with YIJ prime. More, so let me say that the correlation between these and these, it will be higher than the correlation between YIJ and YI prime J. Okay? See what this means. So, I the same person, and I'm saying that the correlation between the correlation of between the blood pressure for the same person, the first visit and the second visit. So J is the first visit, J prime is just a different visit. So the correlation between the two blood measurements would be higher than the correlation between my measurement and my colleague measurement on the same day. So everyone with me? Right? So this is why I use transparency.
Okay. So let's look at data set. Okay, and I found myself very hard to think about statistics if I don't think about data. And so this will be our seventh canonical data set. And at the end of the course, we will know everything about data points, I'm sure. The first three
will have, so what I mean by continuous, I mean that the response will be a continuous variable. So will be, in the first case, the CT4 cell numbers, although it's not really continuous, but approximately continuous. The second one, we will look at the size of a tree. The third one will be looking at the protein content of milk. These will be all longitudinal data sets where the response is continuous. Then we're going to look at two data sets, which is the Indonesian children's health study. That was actually studied by our dean in summer. And the outcome is binary. And also, this one is in clinical trials, where also the clinical trial of the outcome is also binary. And then we will look at the count. Okay, so this will be the data set is all posted on the website, and I'm just going to walk through the data set so you get a very good idea of what are, when, you know, when we are talking about longitudinal data set. So, CT4, especially, I mean, I would say that here in our school, there is so much research going on with HIV. So that's, actually, this is also a study which is going on, I think, forever in the Department of Epidemiology, the MAC study. I don't know, you guys maybe know more than I do. I edited this data set from what was here. So, most of you know that HIV attacks CD4 cells, which regulate the body's immune response to infection agents. And so the data set, of course, has a 2037 fixed value of the CD4 cell number plotted against time since seroconversion for 369 infected men enrolled in the MAC study. Okay. So for each man that is part of the study, they have been measuring the CD4 cell after the seroconversion. And so we have a multiple measurement for each person. And a scientific question is, well, what is the impact of the HIV infection on CD4 counts over time? How fast they decline? Is the rate of decline the same across the different people? There is a lot of different people. So basically, we would like to characterize the typical time course for the CD4 cell depletion. Also identify factors which predict CD4 cells. So if we start treating this patient, is that the rate of the decline is going to change? How fast can we impact it? Okay. And the question four is also very important, to characterize the degree of heterogeneity across men in the rate of progression. So you can actually kind of estimate a trajectory of the CD4 cells, how they vary over time for each person enrolled in the study, right? And if these rate of progression change dramatically from person to person, and then you have one patient walking into the clinic and ask you, well, I mean, how fast are my CD4 cell numbers going to decline? Well, you can answer that. Change completely from person to person. So it would be interesting to know which are the factors, you know, which are the characteristics such that can give you a more specific answer. On the other hand, if the rate of progression is fairly similar across people, then you would be more confident of giving an answer as well as a treatment, right? So how things change across people is really important for treatment, right? So let's see how the data session looks like. So this is actually pretty nice data set because it's a real data set and the real life, the COVID life, is kind of complicated. So on the x-axis, it's time, so the years since the seroconversion. And so you have all this bunch of points. So remember, we have 369 men. And what we did, for example, we connect the CD4 cell number for few people, okay? So this is a particular person, okay? So for a particular man, we have measured CD4 cell number at this time point, here, for another. Okay? So So let's look at this data set. First of all, different people are measured different number of times. Not only are measured different number, different people are measured different number of times, but also they are not measured together. Okay? Some are measured the first month, after 6 months, after 2 years. Others are measured every 5 months. I mean, so it's big, okay? So not only that, the visions are not aligned, okay? And then you see that, the rate of progression, how this person, so they change over time of the CD4 cell for this person is pretty different to this other person. So how we will look at the data, and we will talk about that. Well, first of all, you know that if you're gonna connect the points for every single person, that 369, it's gonna look terrible. You're not gonna see anything, because if you think about you're gonna connect data 369 times, basically it's gonna be very hard, right? But there's one thing that if you look at this data, and you just you go to the museum and you see it, and you look at the picture and think about it. So you see that it is true, though, that it looks like, but you still have to see the non-parametric curve, right? So just a smooth curve for the data. It looks like that they kind of go like that in many states, right? So there is a little evidence that it drops and then kind of flatten out. But, so if you think of one estimate, what is the average rate of progression for the CD4 cell over time, we can characterize the average with a smooth curve. But you all already know that the variability between subjects can be very different. So these are the things that we will look at. And then say, well, now let's assume that for each subject, we have some characteristics to measure. Some subjects take one particular treatment, others take a different treatment. Some of them we know that are depressed, and some others are not. And we know that if the patient is depressed, that's going to have an impact on the immune system. So if you're going to have a different characteristic measure for each. The growth of three data sets, I have to tell you, it's a very boring. But, you see, it's interesting because trees don't move. If you go and measure trees, they will be measured, are always in compliance, so you don't have losing data, you don't have different measurements, so it's a much easier data set. So it's better if you start with the trees than if you start with the CD4. Okay, so this is a very simple data set, and we will go over and over for the first 2 weeks, and just because it's much simpler. And it's always okay. So trees, generally, you do data sets about trees are easy. Animals start to get complicated a little bit. Adults and human beings are always more, right? We are more complicated. So this data set is that we have 39 trees. Okay. Over two growing seasons. So 54 trees were growing with ozone exposure. So basically they were put in a space and they were exposed to ozone. And the 25 trees were not, were in control. Okay? And so what we want to know whether ozone affects the growth of the trees. So are the trees that live in the ozone chamber are going to be, so don't grow more, less, okay? So how does this effect look like? You see, okay. All good. So what I told you is there are 25 trees in the control group and 54 in the treatment where these are supposed to. So let's focus on just one part of the graph, so we don't get confused. Okay? So let's look here. So we have our tree are also measured to different seasons. Okay, so let's well because the growth of the tree change from season to season. So here is the first season, and we're gonna have 12 trees that are under control. Although for me, it's actually hard to think what a control would be because I mean,
would you be able to open?
Anyway, so 12 are under control, and the 27. They are supposed to also, okay? And so what we do is that for each tree, we measure, this is a log size, we measure the size of the time. Okay, these are days, which is basically the number of days, you know, since the beginning of the year, okay? So, well, first of all, everyone is measured all the time. They're not missing data. It's not that they can leave, right? They're there, we measure everybody, right? So, they all grow, right? In both cases. A tree that was big at the beginning is a tree that's also big at the end. See? It's called traffic, right? If the tree is small here, it's also the small there, right? So, what we want to do here, we want to estimate the rate of change here and here, and we want to compare and test if the rate of change between a control and a supposed for zone is different or not, right? And, you know, it kind of look like that the one under the control, the rate of change is higher than the one under the zone. And so, and we do this twice in two different seasons, you see, because how the rate of change of the trees, so how the size of the tree change over time, it's very different in these two seasons, right? So we make this comparison, and so you could think that you want to compare and estimate the rate of change here and compare it there, taking into account that the repeated measurements on a particular tree are correlated. Now, what we will do in all the course, we will also always assume that people are independent, okay? So what you know about a particular tree will not be correlated with another tree, but we will assume and we will take into account that the repeated measurements on the subject are correlated, okay? So that is the second second data set, and we'll see, and you know, that is quite easy to analyze because we call it the balanced data set because all the three are measured the same number of times and at the same time as well. Okay. Now, you see, as soon as we move to animals, we get a little bit more complicated because. So this is another data set where we look at the protein content of milk. So this is a data set where we have 79 cows, they're Australian cows, milk was collected for each cow multiple times. Okay, so these 79 cows were randomized to three different diets. Okay, so we'll see someone get only lupins, another group get only barley. So they are randomized to different diets. We measure their protein content in milk over time. Okay? So how the diet is going to change the protein content of the milk? Of course. You see, now we're going to get missing data and some other problem, but we're not going to talk about that now. Okay. So I'm going to show you the data set. So there are a total of 79 cows, and there are 25 in this plot. There are 27 there and 27.
And the different diets are the barley. The barley diet, what is it? Oh, it's a mixed diet, and this is a lupin. So these are weights. So on the y-axis today, the protein content on milk and on the x-axis are fine. 79 Australian cows randomized through to different treatments. Okay, so the question is, so first of all, you see, if you look at the first plot, you see that there are missing data because this is stopped here. See? So these two cows, we don't have any measurements on week 15 and after. So the question is, the situation is, why is it missing? Is it missing a random? Just because that morning the guy who was supposed to measure the protein content of milk for the cows forget, or because it's something else? Okay, so that's the question. But we will not focus on that for now. You see, there is more variability. It's not true anymore, like the trees, that if the cows had a higher content of milk at the beginning, also have a high protein content of milk at the beginning of the study, also has a high protein content of milk at the end. So, you know, this is a different trajectory cross. It seems that at the beginning, all they had a high protein content of milk, and then it dropped, right? You see it? The first couple of weeks. So I don't know if this diet are good or not. So, but it's also true that you can see that the barley diet, see, if you look at the data, the panel on top, it kind of suggests the first drop, but then it goes up again. See? When it's true a little bit for the meat, it's definitely less true for the loop. So we need to come up with a statistical model that tests the hypothesis. Well, there are different hypotheses we want to look. One is how the protein content of milk changes over time, independent of the diet. Two, how the diet affects the rate of change. Okay? And is there a substantial variability between the Australian cows about how the diet affects the protein content? No. Then also they're missing data. Are these informative data or not? Are we going to deal with it? And I'm kind of, you know, stretching a little bit because actually we are not going to do much in terms of missing data here, but I want to bring it up when I do this, whenever I have a chance. So, any questions? So now we have kids, okay? So this is an Indonesian children's study. And so our dean conducted the study to determine effects of vitamin A deficiency in the preschool children. They had over 3,000 children. They died for up to 6 days, okay, to assess whether they suffer from respiratory infection or serotonia. Serotonia is an ocular manifestation of vitamin A deficiency. And they also measure weight and height. Okay? So they have 3,000 children. Each child gets treated 6 times. And every time they assess whether they have a particular ocular disease and whether they have a respiratory infection. And the both of these disease outcomes, later on, they discovered that it was due to vitamin A deficiency, which was extremely important. It's done by supplementing the population with vitamin A. They basically, you know, had the specific of reducing dramatically incidence of this disease. So, what we want to know, we would like to estimate the increase in risk of respiratory infection for children who are vitamin A deficient while controlling for albumin reductase factor. So we have these children, some of the children get assigned to vitamin A, some they don't. And so we look at, well, if they're, you know, how did these children been treated have a lower risk for respiratory infection than one that's not, assuming that we have a repeated measurement. If you think about the outcome here, and we have respiratory infection, you see the outcome now is silent. So every time a child gets visited, there's a 0-1 of the respiratory infection that does not have respiratory infection. So we are limited in terms of showing data, right? So this is just a table I want to show you, which is basically it's a cross population. So this is the age, and so basically the only thing this is telling you is that you have at age 1, 90 kids. So if you look at these, that's basically, so actually I think what should be simple could be a little confusing, because we're looking at these as a multivariate. So this is actually multivariate and the longitudinal data set, right? Because for each child, we measure both xerophthalmia and the respiratory infection, and we measure both things over time. Now, what we're going to do in this course, so we will look at one outcome at a time. We're not going to do this all together, okay? So, but what basically what you're telling you is that it's just a cross-tabulation phase, but see the number of children at a different age where have, you know, we don't have any of these outcomes, and the numbers they have, they don't have a xerophthalmia, but they have a respiratory infection, so on, right? So, now, what is the longitudinal structure of the data? Is that we have a study child, each child is measured 6 times with respect to the respiratory infection. And so, the vector of measurement of each child will be 6 data points, which could be either 0 or 1. So a particular child will get to something like to look like 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1 for respiratory infection. So what does it mean is that for the first visit, if the child did not have a respiratory infection, then have it on the second, they did not deserve, then have it on the fourth, and have a respiratory infection. This is the same, right? So this is a bit before we had, you know, measurement, the size of the three, first week, the size of the second week. Right? Similar if we think about the xerophthalmia. So for xerophthalmia, because you will have another vector, right? Which will be 1, 1, 0, 0, 1. And this is at the same size. Okay? So although these are binary, we still need to take into account there are binary outcomes of the same sample. And so we have to account for correlation. Okay. Now, these are the other things that in clinical trials we do all the time. And I bet not many people think about these as a longitudinal data set. So, this is an analgesic crossover trial to look at the effectiveness of a treatment for really analgesics. So there are 3 periods, crossover trials, of an analgesic drug for relieving pain for primary dysmenorrhea. So there are 3 levels of an analgesic, which is a control, and low, and high. And we're given to each of 86 women. So women were randomized to one of the 6 possible orders for administrative treatment levels. So one woman can get high, low, placebo. Another woman can get placebo, low, high. Another woman can get high, low, placebo. Okay? So let's look at the table. see how the data looks like. So. So this is the sequence of the treatment. So you have six possible combinations, right? So zero is a placebo, one is low, and two is analgesic. Right? So you have these six combinations. So you're gonna have, so in this case, a woman gets placebo, low, high. In this case, a woman gets the placebo, high, low, and so on, right? So, and so the total number of women is 86, 15 gets a normal mark the first combination, 16 of the second combination. So, you know, so 12 women out of 86 will get no R. Right? Is everyone with me? And every time they get the treatment, they have a binary outcome. Said, yes, I feel better. No, I don't feel better. It's release and then release. Release is release is one. If it's there, it's not release. So let's focus on some of these numbers, right? So, I don't know. Let's look at this. What does it mean? It means that we have two women who got placebo, low, high, who did not feel better with the placebo, feel better with the low, and did not feel better with the high. Take another, let's take this number eight. Whoa. So we have eight women who had low dose of the analgesic, high dose of the analgesic, and placebo. And of these eight women, feel better, do not feel better. You see, this is a strong evidence that the treatment, strong evidence, there is evidence that the treatment is working. Okay? So why is that correlated data? Well, now you see it, because you have the same woman which is going to respond three times. So if a woman has a very low pain tolerance, she always going to say, it's not going to help. Right? So in any case, there is a really a big component, which is the characteristics of the individual, who will drive the correlation with the outcome. So, for example, what we can conclude, we conclude that 22, so now, if you ignore the longitudinal structure of the data, like, you know, in conclusion, you can see that 22 out of the 86 women have a relief because of the placebo. How we did it count? Well, it's number two, what we did how many women say, yes, I feel better when they took the placebo, okay? So let's see how many times we have to look how many women say yes when you have one at the beginning of the treatment. So you know what we need? So what I'm counting is how many, I'm trying to estimate the number you have here. The pain was relieved for 26% of the women with the placebo. So let's focus all in the placebo. Okay? So the first row, the placebo was given at the first time. You see, there is a zero at the beginning, right? And so we want to know how many women say, I feel better the first time. So how many women have a one at the beginning? So you see, we have this one. There's one woman who says, yes, I feel better at the beginning. We have a one at the beginning. And then we have another woman who feels better because of the one. Because we have a two. Now let's look at the sequence. Which again, they got the placebo at the beginning. So we want to see how many women are every time there is a one at the beginning of the sequence. So there's one, see? And then, thank you. Four into five. This is why I did it before count. Then, and then there'll be a stop. Here they go placebo the second time. So we want to look how many get a one the second time. And so, it's one, years. Three, four, for example, this is 20. Now, okay, so this is the, in the back of envelope analysis, but what this analysis is ignoring? It's ignoring the fact that you might have sometimes some carryover effect. So there can be two things. One is the carryover effect, so they got, for the first time, if they got a high treatment, they also might feel better the second time because they are still carrying over with that. But in the longitudinal data structure, most importantly, is that the binary measurements will be highly correlated to the median. Okay? And so you see that often, actually, I'm pretty sure that most of the situation they ignore this reduced subject correlation, and they do a standard test of efficacy of the treatment. Now, the natural data for this data set is very different because this is a count data set. So it's so we will see that we will analyze this data by using a Poisson. So we look at epileptic seizures. This is a clinical trial of 59 epileptics. And so this is really the design of the study. So for each patient, they measured the number of epileptic seizures that they had during a 4-week period. Okay? So this is a week 8. So they, white eye there is basically is like a baseline. So the number of epileptic seizures that each patient has during the first 8 weeks. And they've made these measurements for everybody. You see now the response is a number of epileptic seizures, a count over a time interval. Number of epileptic seizures over 8 weeks. Then, after 8 weeks, they randomize the 59, half gets a treatment, they call the progabivir drug, and half gets placebo. And then they measure the number of epileptic seizures the first 2 weeks, then again after 2 weeks, then again after 2 weeks, and then again after 2 weeks. Okay? So each patient has a vector of 5 measurements. The first is the number of epileptic seizures at baseline during 8 weeks, and then 4 subsequent counts of epileptic seizure in a 2-week time interval. Well, then what we want to know is whether the progabile reduce the rate of epileptic seizure. Okay. So here is the table. So this is how the data set looks like. Can we go a little bit more? So we know the age of the patient. So these are the 59 patients. See, this column tells you the age. So these are very young, 31, 30, 25. So these are all the ages. Base is the number of epileptic seizures they have during the first 8 weeks. So then we know what is their baseline number of epileptic seizures. Then the treatment is the binary variable, which is telling you that all these patients here get the placebo, and all these patients get the treatment. And then the first 4 columns tell you the number of epileptic seizures first 2 weeks, the second 2 weeks, and so on. So the first row is telling you that patients of age 31 had during the first 8 weeks prior entering the trial 11 epileptic seizures. He got randomized to a placebo. In the first 2 weeks, he had 5 epileptic seizures. The second week, he had the second time, he had 3, and then 3. Okay. So, for example, you can think that for this patient, is actually the treatment is working if the patient is 30 years old, 30 31 epileptic seizures within the first 3 weeks. He got the treatment, and actually somebody declined. Okay? So now we have each patient, he arrives to 5 measurements. Also, we took account that the baseline is in respect to 8 weeks. The other one with respect to 2 weeks, so we have to be adjusted. And so we want to know, is the treatment effective? So these are actually box plots. So these data sets doesn't tell you anything about the longitudinal structure of the data. It's simply giving you the box plot. This is the distribution. So box plot is a way of representing a distribution of the data. The middle of the box plot is the median, and the box is basically the 75%. It is called the intercluster range. So basically, if you look on top, so this is the distribution of epileptic seizure, actually the square root of baseline. And so you see that there is almost no change in the distribution of the epileptic seizure across all the patients at the different time points. Whenever, if you instead start looking at the probability, there is a little bit, you see there is some evidence that at least with respect to the baseline, goes down, okay, but this is very weak. This is not, this plot is not showing you anyway the longitudinal structure, right? It's just, and this is basically characterizing the distribution of epileptic seizures in the population of patients separately at each time point. Okay, that's all it's doing. So now, if I show you a long data set, right? HIV data set, Australian cows, Australian males, kids in Indonesia, patients which have HIV, so COVID trials, this is a lot of data, right? So now let's try to a little bit thinking bigger picture, okay? So why do we show you all these data? What's all the data in common? Okay? So they have, these are repeated observation of each experiment. So you have CD4 cells measured times, the size of the tree measured multiple times, what it comes in the milk, release and overlays, and so on, right? Now, you see that in all these data sets, it's kind of difficult to think that the humans are independent. Okay, so the trajectory of the CD4 cells for a particular patient, you know, it's independent of the trajectory of the CD4 cells for a patient. And and the multiple responses within each unit are likely to be correlated. So, most of the time, the objective, the scientific question that we want to address is, you know, most of the time it would be, what is the effect of a particular covariance on health? Okay? And so, most of the time, our scientific question is being translated by formulating a regression model where we have the outcome, covariance, the confounder. And we want to estimate the regression parameter, the treatment effect, and the rate of change. Okay? And we will estimate the treatment effect of the rate of change, taking into account the data correlated. So that's what all, of course, the choice of the statistical model must depend on the type of outcome variable. If the outcome variable is continuous, we will generalize what we already know as a linear regression model. We would like to generalize it called general linear model. If the outcome is binary, we will generalize the logistic regression, so account for the correlation. If the data are count, we will generalize the cost of regression. Okay? So, I mean, most of the time, I'll think about the course by bringing a data set, formulating a scientific question, figure out what we need to know, formulating a statistical model, feeding the statistical model, and find out if the data is correct or not. And now, and you know, we will go over and over the data sets. We will use the data set, all of the data sets for doing explorative analysis, and then we will bring it back to the regression, and then we will bring it back to the diagnosis, and so on. So you will look at the data set on the different angles. Now, in terms of computing, so one thing that we will do in this course is use Stata. So Stata is our canonical software. Now, you want to use FAST, that's perfectly fine to me. Both, all three the APAs have knowledge of FAST, and there's going to be a lot of FAST material on the coursework page. But the labs will be running Stata. And I have no problem, you can use any obscure statistical software that you like to use, but not sure that provide reasonable answer. So that's important to I think I'm gonna, I'll show you a quick here and take any questions you have. Yeah.
Can you just briefly discuss the advantages, disadvantages of status?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, SAS allow you to do, SAS is a much richer statistical program, statistical software. So for this course, SAS will, especially at the second part of the course, SAS will allow you to do many more things the Stata doesn't allow you to do. So on the other hand, Stata is a little bit more transparent, it's easier to use, and that's what most of your previous classes. That's what we need. So, if you have a little bit of knowledge of SAS, the best way to do it is just to do in Stata, but also continue to increase your level of SAS by using the macro, because it just will be much better in the long term. Stata, what's happening with Stata is that at the end of the course, any additional complication of the statistical model that is in the course, you will not be able to do in Stata. So, I mean, we are really stretching Stata as much as we can here. When we start, there are many more things we can do. Any other questions? No? Okay. All right.